This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. For a long, long time, the work of African-American artists did not get much recognition in the world of fine art. That hasn't stopped art lovers from building impressive collections of work by painters, sculptors, and others. Today, we're going to revisit a conversation with a couple of collectors who will talk about their love for the works that they've bought over the years and how the business of buying and selling work by Black artists has changed. George Anamdi is founder and owner of the Anamdi Center for Contemporary Art in Detroit. For several decades, it's been a go-to destination to see art and meet Black artists. We're also speaking with Reverend Anthony Artis. He's a minister and art collector living in Flint. Works belonging to his family were on view earlier this year at the Flint Institute of Arts in an exhibition called Wonderfully Made. Reverend Artis, George, welcome to both of you.
Well, happy to be here.
Hey, it's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Could we start out, Anthony, I just wanted to ask you about the first work that you bought.
Yeah, the first piece my family ever bought that had some kind of investment value, that was a real piece of quality art, was a 1904 circa etching by Henry Ossawa Tanner, entitled The Disciples See Christ Walking on the Water. And
for those who don't know, he was really the first African-American painter to really gain recognition, wasn't he?
Actually, internationally, there was a couple other African-American artists that ended up leaving America, going to Paris, France, and I had a chance to be judged more so on their talent. But Tanner, what really touches my heart is the fact that he focused a lot on religious themes. His father was Benjamin Tanner, who was a bishop in the AME church, and his father was trying to get his son to walk in his footsteps, hoping to be a preacher or pastor. And he said, "Dad, you know, you use your pulpit to preach." He said, "I'll use my brush."
There are a number of works in the collection that are centered around themes of faith. Obviously, this one fit right in with your interests in a lot of ways and works on a lot of different levels. You and your wife, Davida, now have a collection that also includes works by Jacob Lawrence, you know, one of the masters, and contemporary artists, cutting-edge people like Yehinde Wiley. At what point did this become more than a collection of works that you liked and that inspired you?
Well, my big motivation, arts didn't really intercept my life until I was in my mid-40s. And at the time, I was working at the Ruth Mott Foundation in Flint and exposed to Marianne Mott's Mott Warsh collection. You know, being able to choose artworks from her collection to hang in our office, it was a perk. But at the time, I knew nothing about art. I wasn't really reared in it. My last name is Artis, so I think God has a sense of humor. But I didn't appreciate it. One day, I made a flippant comment to my curator colleague, and I said, "Whoever this Jacob Lawrence guy is," I said, "my son can, you know, draw better than him, and he's in the third and seventh grade." And she says, "Really?" So the piece we were looking at was entitled St. Mark. She said, "Anthony, here's what I want you to do. I want you to research the piece, research the artist and the subject matter. Let's just have a conversation." That piece, it had a picture of a Black man, real dark color, a unique uniform. And after I began to research it, went home, Googled it, I realized that piece was General Toussaint Louverture, who led a place called Little Hispaniola or Little Spain or Haiti.
That we know now as the architect of the Haitian Revolution.
Exactly. And he led a group of people who were migrants or sharecroppers or farmers to fight for their liberation against the Spanish army and the French army simultaneously. And they won their freedom. You know, usually you always read about a group of Blacks that rise and they all get slaughtered. You know, Nat Turner and stuff like that. You know, they all get massacred and captured. But in this case, they won their freedom. And this is against Napoleon Bonaparte and the Spanish army as well. And I was floored. And at that point, then I began to research Jacob Lawrence, and I realized he was one of the most prominent African-American artists at all time. And I was ashamed. I was ashamed that I didn't know about these people. And so when I went to work on Monday, you know, I ate a big chunk of humble pie. And the curator, she says, "Anthony, listen," she said, "by the way, these pieces in your office are more than your salary." And at that point, you know, being an undergrad in accounting, you know, the financial piece as well as the historical piece and the beauty of it, it just really, that's when I got bit hard by the art bug.
Yeah. George Anamdi?
Yes.
When you first opened your gallery in 1981, what was the art scene in Detroit like?
the art scene in Detroit in 81, it was very unique. It was active art scene, but we didn't have galleries per se. And I really started the gallery. I was trained, I have a degree in psychology from the University of Michigan here, and I thought of the arts being something for our community's mental health.
And we were just coming out of the 70s, you know, just an explosive period of black creativity in Detroit.
Exactly. We had a lot, but we didn't have galleries. But we did our first exhibition in 1981. It was all abstract art, and all the artists there were from New York. And that was a great exhibition. I didn't know how great it was until other people started telling me, and then it got written up as the best group exhibition of the season. And to have that on your first exhibition was huge.
How did you talk to people about collecting when you first started out?
Well, I started buying art when I was 22 years old. Okay, I bought my first piece. I was at Ohio State. My tuition was $150. And I spent $125 for art. And everybody thought I was just crazy. And I thought I was crazy, too, because, like, who buys art at 22, right? So I understood the feeling that people would have, the reservations about spending, because I had it myself. And oftentimes, I would just take art to people's homes. I would place it on their walls. I'll come back a month, 6 weeks later, and see if they liked anything. And they said, oh, I can't afford it. So I said, okay. I started taking it down. Then they start seeing the void. See, art changes your life, and you don't know that it has. You know, so you don't know that you've been living in this void with nothing on your walls, right?
So they couldn't imagine the space without it.
Yes. Yeah. Then they said, let's work this out. Let's see how we can work this out. So that's how it became, you know.
Every art collection is really a kind of personal statement. Mm-hmm. How do you bring people along to understanding what their own collections might mean to them?
A lot of people come and say, I don't know what I like. And I give you one example. I had someone that said that to me, and I said, okay, let me see your closet. So I went to their closet and saw the colors and the styles that they had. Then I came back a couple of weeks later and presented work. He said, oh, I like this. He said, how would you know I like that? Well, everyone has a taste. You haven't had the opportunity to articulate it in art. I'm always trying to educate where you expand your vision. I don't want to change it. Just expand it.
Hopefully, works of art aren't just a look, but also an idea.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Anthony Artis, when I went to see the exhibition drawn from your collection at the Flint Institute of Arts.
Thanks for going.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's really wonderful.
Thank you.
I loved seeing the works by big name artists, but I was also so in love with work by artists that you helped me to discover. There's an etching there by a guy named Benny Andrews that just captures four kids on a dreamy summer afternoon kind of moment.
Yeah.
And there's a print by the Brooklyn artist who created the series Stop Telling Women to Smile, who I'd seen her work. I didn't even realize I knew who she was. But she did street art portraits of women sort of punching back against street harassment. Her name is Tatiana Fazlalizadeh.
Mm-hmm. Good job.
I practiced. What kind of moments of discovery do you get out of looking at art?
Oh, wow. For me, each of the pieces we have kind of has their own personal story. Like, it's one piece by Michael B. Platt, and it's a picture of two sisters. And one has their arm around the other sister. And they're both young girls, probably definitely under the age of 7 or 10. But when I first saw the piece, it reminded me of a picture of my mother and her twin sister when they were 4 years old. My mother's a twin, and my father, he's a twin.
And oh, wow.
So my mother's name is Juanita Artis, and my aunt is Melita Mosley. And so in the picture, they both had a bow on their hairs, little white dresses, and they had an arm around each other. And so when I saw the title of the piece, Two Sisters, immediately, you know, it took me to that childhood photo of my mom and her twin. And so the first time we ever shared our art publicly, that was a piece that they focused on in their marketing materials. And I realized, you know, we didn't want to do any kind of copyright infringement. And so they said, Anthony, you better get the permission from the artist. So I was able to contact Mr. Platt directly. And in talking, he said, well, are you going to use this? You know, how are you going to use this image? And I said, sir, I said, we're going to do a lecture to educate people on what you're doing and just share information. He said, man, well, where's this going to take place? And I said, well, Flint, Michigan, at Flint Public Library. He said, get out of here. He said, my wife is from Flint. She was born in Flint. He says, Carol, hey, baby, they're going to do something in Flint. We're going to help them. And so all of a sudden, he just, I mean, no reservation. He was all in. And then he says, listen, if you're ever on the East Coast, he says, I live not far from Howard University. Come on, check us out. Let me show you my studio. And I felt like I met a long lost friend. And so 2 years later, David and I had the privilege of going to the East Coast to do some to attend a collector's event at the Driscoll Center at the University of Maryland. And then going out there, we had the wonderful privilege of meeting Michael B. Platt and his wife, Carol A. Bean. She's a poet. But long story short, they had this big dinner for my wife, Davita, and I. They really loved on us and treated us with kindness. And we really were long lost friends. And sadly, he passed last year. And but every time now I see this piece, it, you know, started out reminding me of my mother. Now it reminds me of a wonderful man who had a wonderful gift.
If you're just joining us today, my guests are Reverend Anthony Artis, he's a collector who lives in the city of Flint, and George Anamdi, founder and owner of Anamdi Center for Contemporary Art in Detroit. The art world has been through so many seismic changes in the past decade. It used to be that galleries were all about building relationships with collectors. And there's no gallery that's going to turn you away when you walk in. But the people who run galleries now have to spend a significant portion of their year on the road, running around international art fairs. You know, Art Basel is the name that everybody knows, but also Art Basel Miami, the LA Art Fair, Frieze New York. And at the same time, it seems like the art world is turning to African-American artists, like all of a sudden, to, you know, to fix a lack of representation.
Yes.
George Anamdi, how have things changed for the way that you do business in this environment?
Well, it's changed. I think, one, people think about investment a lot more. When they always talk about investment in art, you know. Well, when I started, art was not an investment for me. I mean, I thought it may appreciate a little bit, but not like it has today. And I always explain to people, because most of the time what you're buying is not really a serious investment. Just because you buy something from an artist doesn't mean it's going to really appreciate. But I do try to tell them, it's like what you do, just buy what you like and just enjoy it. Your investment is having the experience of having it in your life, and it changes your life. It changes how you look at things. I had a abstract painting that I would come home to sometime and just look at, you know, and this float away in it, you know. So you have all these different kind of experiences. So it does change how you do things and how you see the world. We got to get back to buying it because you really like it. If you want to do a collection, try to have a direction with your collection. So your collection represents some type of theme or some type of style.
Artists exploring ideas in different ways.
You know, yeah. So like I have my collection is predominantly abstract.
Anthony, just in the time that your family has been collecting, have you noticed changes in what's going on and what's on the market and maybe sometimes who you're bidding against?
Yeah, I'm noticing when I first really woke up to it, right around 2009, we bought the Tanner piece. And I was made aware of Swan Galleries in New York. You know, they were the first ones to really have a specific African-American artist, you know, sale. And so I started out initially getting some of the catalogs and just getting familiar with the names. And And so over time, you know, I would see some familiar pieces that would resurrect every few years, where now it just seems like, you know, they're starting to sell more. The values are just, you know, kind of mind-blowing. You know, I don't know if it's just trendy or people just waking up to it, but I'm starting to see a lot more people entering the game. I know Puff Daddy or P. Diddy bought the one Kerry James Marshall piece.
He's a serious collector.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, some of the people who let me know he bought it wasn't so much for his love, but really to make a mark saying I got the top, you know, piece at this value. And so, you know, people are in it for different reasons, but, you know, I'm in it because it really speaks to me, and certain artists' stories speak to me. Benny Andrews, the piece that we had at the exhibition was called Dreamer, and it shows a few kids laying on the beach, and they have a little afro. And when he was a child, you know, he just dreamed about being off the farmland in Plainview, Georgia, getting out the hot sun working. And ultimately, once he did get an education, travel the world via the Air Force, he saw a lot of dreams come true. But what really touches me about this man's story is the fact that he protested for a lot of New York galleries and for people to give people of color an opportunity to share and to show their works.
George Anandi, if someone is the kind of person who most of the art they see is maybe on Instagram, and they're just thinking about themselves entering this space as a collector, I heard what you said, that you'd advise people to go for the art that moves you. But is there any other advice you would have for people who are thinking about collecting African-American artists right now?
Well, First of all, I would say that not only that it moves you, but I think you also need to have an advisor. The dealer is not a middleman in art, okay? It's not like a wholesaler.
They're right.
Not there. That's the market is really the dealer. And I always say that, you know, the educated person, you get much further with the dealer knowing what you're getting.
Why not buy direct from artists?
Well, one, if an artist sells a lot directly to the public, they're going to spend a lot of their time just selling. They will not be creating. Okay. And the artists, if you want to create value, you need someone else telling people this is great. Everybody come to your studio and you saying, I'm great. You know, you don't want
to hear
that.
You need to be great.
Yeah, right. Right. So a lot of times that's what happens. You know, the artists get caught up in just selling their own work and they don't go further.
George Anandi, thank you so much for all your work over the years and for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
George Anandi is the founder and owner of the Anandi Center for Contemporary Art in Detroit. And we've also been talking with Reverend Anthony Artis. Works belonging to his family were on view earlier this year at the Flint Institute of Arts in an exhibition called Wonderfully Made. Thank you so much for being with us here and sharing some of your experiences.
Thank you.
Support for arts and culture coverage on Stateside comes in part from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs.